we're in Daniel 2, and if you remember in the introduction, I said that there are several reasons for studying Daniel. One of the reasons, of course, is to understand the book of Daniel better. But also, a primary reason for studying the book of Daniel is to get a good, firm foundation so that we may be able to not only understand, but to teach others. Last week, we got into the study of the image of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. We began a study, we kind of pointed out, and we'll pick up there in just a few minutes. And then next week, there's going to be a break. We'll have a guest speaker who will be taking over the class and for the worship, rest of the worship services of that day. And then the following week, I've already printed out basically an outline of the different views that we're going to study about the image of Nebuchadnezzar. I went ahead and printed out everything, just about everything, so that you'll be able to take it home and to understand. Now, some of you will be going to Red River in 2 weeks, right? Okay, which is unfortunate because when you come back, there'll be a test on those four views. And the grades will be posted in the bulletin for all to see and on Facebook and everything else that we have. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Chump, or whatever it's called. I'm not on any of those things. I hardly know how to open up email. So there's an idea. Now, if you remember also in our introduction, I pointed out that I used to work with a man back in Memphis. And he had a book with 80 contradictions in the Bible. 80 contradictions. And of course, you know, we went back and forth on these contradictions. Last week after class, a man came up to me, and as usual, when a man comes up to me and I prepare an answer to his question, he's not in my class the following Sunday. But anyway, he came up with a question. There's a contradiction in Daniel chapter 2. Did anybody catch it? Daniel chapter 2, verse 1, where it says, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed a dream, and his spirit was troubled. And he goes on, he talks to the wise men. He asks them to interpret the dream. We don't know what it is. It's coming from us. And so he gets mad, and he decrees that he is going to kill all the wise men. And if you look in verse 13 says what? So the decree went forth, and the wise men were to be slain, and they sought Daniel and his companions to be slain. So we see Daniel is included with the wise men. Now, if you remember in chapter 1 states that in verse 5, the last part of verse 5, that they are under under an individual. Within 3 years, after 3 years, they should stand before the king. To stand before the king is not just to stand up there to ask questions, it's stand up there to be given official capacity. And then in verse 18, we see that they stand before the king and they answer the questions, and they give better answers than everybody else of the things that Nebuchadnezzar inquired of him. Okay? So after 3 years, we have what? Daniel and his friends are given official capacity as wise men under Nebuchadnezzar. Brings us to chapter 2. What does it say? In the second year. So the question came up, how can it be the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign when Daniel and them stood before him at the end of 3 years? Do you see the controversy? Do you see the controversy? You do see the controversy. Okay, so here we go. The reason for the board. In 609, I got to stand taller. 609, Josiah is killed by Pharaoh Necho at the Battle of Megiddo. It is at this time that Jehoahaz is taking place. He only in 3 years, and then Eliakim comes up. Pharaoh Necho sets him on the throne and changes his name to Jehoiakim. This is 609. Okay? He reigns till, 597. In 597, Nebuchadnezzar's in control, and then we got his son Jehoiachin, who takes his place in 597, but he only reigns 3 months. And then also in 597, we have Zedekiah. I can't remember. Okay. My spelling's not real good, and you think Joanne's hard to spell. All right. So this is in 597. Jeremiah chapter 25. Turn to there, please. Jeremiah 25. Beginning in verse 1, the word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the peoples of Judah. Notice, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Jerusalem, the same was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, some of your translation will say Nebuchadrezzar. Some translations say Nebuchadrezzar. Some translations will say Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? So that's in the fourth year. Let me get rid of this. We know from history that Jehoiakim was set on the throne in the year 609. So in the fourth year would be 605. And that coincides with the Battle of Carchemish. Coincides with the Battle of Carchemish, which was in the fourth year of what? Look at your text. Jehoiakim. All right, now turn, if you will, to Jeremiah 46. Jeremiah 46, the word of Jehovah, beginning in verse 1, the word of Jehovah which came to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the nations of Egypt, concerning the army of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, which was at the river of the Euphrates in Carchemish when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, smote in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. So we see that the Battle of Carchemish was in 605, which was the what? Fourth year of Jehoiakim. Okay? I'm throwing a lot at you, but I want you to see the timeline here. So we know the Battle of Carchemish was in Jehoiakim. Now, go back to Daniel chapter 1. In Daniel chapter 1, it says in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. That's what it says, right? Okay. The third year of Jehoiakim's reign would be 606. Be 606 BC. That would be the third year. Now, in Daniel chapter 2, keep this in mind as I will come back to it. Now, it is in the second year that Nebuchadnezzar gets a dream. Now, it is verified through study that the first year under the Babylonian unrule, the first year is called the Ascension year. That would be the first year of a rule. The second year would be called the first year of rule. And then the third year would be the second year of rule. So everybody following me on that? Nobody. Dallas is laughing. You've already got this down. I'm just wasting my breath. Okay. Now, if we look at this, we still have a problem. We have a problem with 605. Okay? There's our problem. Because it's very clear from biblical history and from the words of Jeremiah that it is in the fourth year of Jehoiakim that Pharaoh Necho won the Battle of Carchemish, right? Somebody nod your head, okay? Thank you. Everybody looking at me with blank faces. This stuff's not that hard. But what I'm telling you is essential, and I want you to pursue this on your own. There's a lot in here, but I do want you to pursue this. Because this is just an example of what you're going to run into when you talk to people, the naysayers, and those who are of other religious beliefs. So we got 605. Now, still gives us a problem. Babylonian historian, I forget his name, Horasus, I think was his name. Don't quote me on that, I forget. But he recorded that while Nebuchadnezzar was at the Battle of Carchemish, Nabopolassar, which was his father, was still king. But it was in year 605 when Nebuchadnezzar was at Carchemish that he hears of that Nebuchadnezzar has died. So he goes back to Babylon to regain rule of the kingdom and leaves his army there under his subordinates to finish the fight in 605. Okay? All right. And it's also at this time, after the Battle of Carchemish, that the Babylonian army comes down and we have the first deportation of Jerusalem, which is 605. But what do I do about the third year, which is 606? Somebody read me Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. Anybody? Okay, in the third year, 609. But we know that the first deportation wasn't until 605. Did it say that in the third year of Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem and conquered it or besieged it? There is a difference. There is a difference. And you will read in scripture and also in history that for 3 years, Jehoiakim was a vassal king under Nebuchadnezzar. It was only until his fourth year that he rebels. And it's at this time the army of Nebuchadnezzar comes and conquers the city of Jerusalem and then takes the seed roll in. All right. Now, that's just a brief study that I want you to pursue on your own, on the dates. But notice once again, in the third year of Jehoiakim, king of Jerusalem, King Nebuchadnezzar comes. Now, we've already established that Nebuchadnezzar wasn't a king yet. He doesn't become king to 605 B.C. when his father Nabopolassar dies. Okay? So what is Daniel saying here in verse 1? Do we have another contradiction? Well, you know, when President Lincoln was a little boy.
Yeah, we call him President Lincoln.
But when you write out history, what do you call him?
President Lincoln.
Or when President Teddy Roosevelt, rode the Rough Riders up that hill in San Juan. He wasn't president then, but that's what you call him. When Daniel is writing his memoirs or whatever this is called, the book of Daniel, who is he under? King Nebuchadnezzar. So as he writes, even though Nebuchadnezzar was not king at the time, in the third year of Jehoiakim, King Nebuchadnezzar, who was king at that time, but not king at the time of the siege. You see. So it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple if we look at all the facts. It's only when we take things a verse here or a verse here that we run into problems. Now, you will find out in your studies, especially the prophets. The prophet Isaiah is a good one. The prophet Isaiah is not in chronological order. So it's hard to study the prophet Isaiah, chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. I have found out it's easier to break it up and put it in chronological order to do the study. But that's the way they write, and we've got to understand that. Now, let me give you one example of biblical writing that goes along with this. Has anybody ever heard of the creation gap theory? Okay, I got one, two. Okay, creation gap. Turn to Genesis 1:1. Okay, Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Verse 2. And the earth was void, and the Spirit of Jehovah, Spirit of God, brooded over the face of the waters. These two verses right here has caused theologians to say that there was a creation in 1:1, a destruction of that creation, and a recreation in Genesis 1:2. And they build a doctrine on top of it, some do. Okay? But that's how the Bible is written. It writes things in such a way to introduce that sometimes we can become confused in what's being said, and then the next thing you know, we've got a controversy, which we really do not have a controversy. Is everybody with me on this? So, when I go to Daniel chapter 2, when I go to Daniel chapter 2, and I say, in the second year of King Nebuchadnezzar, he dreams a dream, what am I saying? Is this a literal second year? Or do I understand that in his first year there was an ascension? It's called an ascension year under Babylonia. And I, from what I understand, others did the same thing. So we have an ascension year. That would be his first year. Then his second year would be his first year, right? And his third year would be his second year of rule. And that falls right in line with the 3 years of captivity that Daniel and his companions was in. One other point before we go on. Answer that.
You want me to shut it off?
Nah, you can just go ahead and talk. If it's important. It's like me, it's never important. It's always a scam. Okay. Not every year is a full year. Understand that too. When it says the Israelites wandered in the wilderness 40 years, it wasn't literally a 40-year thing. A little less than 40 years. But we always round it up. Jesus was in the tomb 3 days, and I've heard arguments on this. He was taken down on a Friday, he was in there Saturday, he was in there Sunday, and he'd come up sometime Monday morning. 3 days. Well, we know that's not true.
It doesn't say that, though. It says on the third day.
It says on the third day, which would be actually the second day he was basically. As a matter of fact, if you want to get technical about it, Jesus could have been in the tomb as little as 26 hours. I went to school for 12 years in one Sabbath. Did I literally go 12 years? No. As a matter of fact, so we do the same thing. We round things up just like everything else. Now, I'm telling you all this, like I said, to show a good example of how we need a good foundation. And there's a lot of good books out there that are simple to read. Merle Unger, Joseph Free, William Albright, Pfeiffer, Wilbur Smith. A bunch of these guys have good books on archaeology and biblical history that helps you understand the time frame which these things take over, okay? Any questions? All right. Question number four in your study guide. We have what is the question? Daniel before the king of the Greek. All right, we're looking at the dream revealed. And this is what we discussed last week. We discussed the dream, the image of the statue. The head of gold is Babylon. Breast and arms of silver is the Medo-Persian kingdom. Body and thighs of brass is the Grecian kingdom. And the leg and feet of iron and clay is the Roman kingdom. Now, this is also important. And this is, like I said, we won't do it next week because of the special speaker that we'll have. But the week after, we're going to get into the four views of the image, okay? We're going to see the four views and the problems with it. Now, the time frame of the image basically would be from 626 when Babylon came into power, 626 BC, to 31 BC, the Battle of Actium, where we see Rome recognized as a world power at that time. So there's your time frame on that. If you were here last week and you remembered, we talked about the legs and the feet of iron and clay, which is the Roman kingdom. Dispensationalists, the premillennialists, will talk about toes, the 10 toes. Toes are not mentioned until we get down to verse 40, 41. But yet, that's an important part to the premillennial doctrine. And if you notice that the stone, what is in verse 35? Yeah, verse 35, that the stone that was cut without hands comes down and it smokes the image, and the image becomes as dust and chaffed in the wind and is blown away, except for the toes. Everybody see that in your scripture? Not at all. But yet, toes are an important part in this religious doctrine. This will be something else that we get up to. But for right now, I want to talk about the idea of the feet, the legs and feet being of iron and clay, and we'll deal with the toes in a couple of weeks. Iron and clay description of the image well defines Rome. Rome was a poor city who expanded herself, and because she expanded herself so much she, in taking the territory, that she had to set up a system where there were free cities. We know of Tarsus. Tarsus was one. Where there were kings set up, and all they had to do was pay taxes, have their allegiance to Rome, and then Rome would not crush them, as they did so many other cities. But they mingled themselves with the people of other cultures, and this was Rome's undoing. And it's the undoing of any country when they mingle the other or try to assimilate other people's countries and customs into their custom, and pretty soon the country is gone. This is a historical fact that always happens. I want you to turn to Revelation chapter 17. Now, if you remember when we studied Revelation, I told you that Daniel and Revelation go good together. In Revelation 17, beginning in verse 1, "And there came one of the seven angels that had the seven bowls with thee, saying, Come hither, and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot that sits upon many waters." So here we see Rome described as a prostitute. And she sits upon many waters. If you look at 17 and verse 15, "And he said unto me, The waters which you saw where the harlot sits are the people and the multitudes and nations and tongues." So here we have a definition of what the waters are. They are the different people, they are the different nations which Rome set up or conquered and set up. Now when we get to, if you also notice in verse 3, "And he carried with me, carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw the woman sitting upon a scarlet beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns." Now we see the woman sitting, not sitting on the nations, but sitting upon a scarlet beast. This is Rome in its civil power or its military might. Seven heads would be the seven emperors, which will be discussed in 17. The ten horns are the ten kings which have not yet received their authority yet. These would be the ten kings of other countries that Rome would take over and set up there at that time. Now, as you look at Revelation, you will see in chapter 11, the two witnesses. If you remember your Revelation study, the two witnesses represent the people of God. In Revelation 11, they are put down, and then in verse 8, they are killed. "Over their dead bodies lie in the street in the great city, which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt, and where also the Lord was crucified." Sodom would represent worldliness. Egypt would represent persecution or bondage. Where the Lord was crucified would represent Jerusalem, which would be a perverted religion at that time. When you read the Gospel of John, you see that Jesus was attacked by worldliness, civil power, and perverted religion. In Revelation, you see that the people of God, Jesus' people, they are attacked by worldliness, civil persecution, or civil power, and perverted religion. I'm saying all this to bring us back to the image with the feet of iron and clay. Rome's undoing was the fact that she mingled herself with other people. So in some areas she was strong, but in other areas she was weak. And this is when, the statue is taken down. The idea of her name, of she riding on the beef whose name was, names were of blasphemy, is the idea of the Caesar worship that was at that time. When we get to Domitian, which will be in Daniel chapter 7, the 11th horn, which becomes the 8th. In the book of Revelation, he is the 8th, which in apocalyptic speech is the resurrection number. When we get to Domitian, you will see that Domitian did not wait to die to be deified. He deified himself when he was alive. And he would tell his people, approach my divine couch. So we see here the undoing of Rome in its ungodliness, in its mingling of people, and of course in herself being stretched out. Any questions so far on all that? Okay. Nobody has any questions. All right. Okay. Let's go back to the image then. Let's go back to the image. Daniel chapter 2. Notice in Daniel chapter 2, and verse 44. And in the days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, nor shall the sovereignty thereof be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So, in the days of those kings, what is meant there? A couple of theories that people have, one is simply this, stone cut. In the days of those kings, the kings of Rome. After all, Christianity was set up during the Roman Empire, right? So that's usually what people think, but let me say that there could be a debate on that. When does the stone strike the image? When it's divided or as a unit? As a unit. So the second thing would be the kings of that image. The kings of that image. The stone did not strike the image until struck the image as it was one thing. As it was one thing. One unit, excuse me. Now it's clear that Jesus was born under Roman rule. And it's also very clear that Jesus died and became King of Kings and Lords of Lords under Roman rule, right? So the first point looks pretty good, but as you read Daniel, there's no separation of kingdoms. It just says, head of gold is Babylon, arms and breasts of silver is Medo-Persia, the legs, the breasts of, anyway, okay, Babylon, Greek, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. So it's one unit. Turn to Daniel chapter 7. And let's get this straight. In Daniel chapter 7, and I know I told you guys not to read it, but it will help us understand this. In Daniel chapter 7, we have the vision of the four night beasts. We have a lion, a bear, a leopard, and an undescribable beast. Of course, we have the lion, Babylon, the bear, Medo-Persia, the leopard is Greece, and undescribable beast is Rome. When you get into Revelation chapter 13, you will see that John sees a beast that is made up of a leopard, a bear, and a lion. Daniel looks forward to Revelation. John looks back towards Daniel. But But in Daniel chapter 7, in verse 12, well, let's look in verse 11. And I beheld at that time the voice of the great words which the horn spake, that would be the 11th horn of the beast. And I beheld even as the beast was slain, his body destroyed, and it was given to be burned with fire. Verse 12. And as for the rest of the beast, their dominion was taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Now, some of your translations will word that differently, but the idea is still there. Their lives prolonged in the fourth beast. And that makes sense, too, because as, well, when Nebuchadnezzar besieged Jerusalem and conquered it the first time, what did he bring into his courts? The seed royal, right? You always take a conquering nation always takes something from the nation it conquers so it can better itself. It always does. That's true of any conquering nation. And so we see here in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 12 that the lives of the former kingdoms were prolonged in the fourth beast. Okay? So let me suggest unto you, and you can see this on your own also, the king of the, and the days of those kings would refer to the kings of the image and not just the kings of the Roman Empire. Okay? Any questions on that?
Could you repeat that last statement again?
Probably not. In the days of those kings, would mean in the days of the kings of the image and not just the kings of Rome. In other words, the stone struck the statue as it was one unit. We know from Daniel chapter 7 and verse 12 that the kingdoms, the previous kingdoms were still alive in the fourth kingdom, which is only natural. Conquering kingdoms always take the best and incorporate it into their kingdom. Anybody got a question I can answer? All right, we're going to cut it short there. Like I said, next week we'll have a guest speaker. And then the week following, we will discuss the four views of the image. And then we'll move on. Thanks for your attention. God bless you.